Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to episode 88 of Jock Talk. Hope you enjoyed your Easter weekend. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. What's the situation report?
It's the sit rep, baby, but I got you. We are 5x5. The light is red, and we are 5x5, my friend.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 88. Who comes to mind?
The great Drew Pearson. What's my man name? And I tried to throw a random in. What is his name?
Antonio Bryant,
who threw the jersey at Bill Parcells.
No, who threw the sweaty jersey?
Yeah,
at Bill Parcells' face. You got to say the sweaty jersey.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he was on the practice field, and of course, Dez Bryant.
Right, right, right. We gonna get some CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my personal favorite. Did you say Michael Irvin, man?
No, I didn't say Michael Irvin.
You skipped over Michael Irvin. And then my personal favorite, Jackie Harris.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought it was sacrilegious they gave Jackie Harris 88.
Yeah,
NFL player.
He came from New Orleans.
Yeah, it just seemed wrong to give him that number.
I remembered that, but I wasn't going to stick it in there.
All right, well, we appreciate that. We hope you're prepared to be entertained and dazzled for the next hour or so. Understand this. If you're ever involved in a car accident, it's not your fault. What you got to do is pick up that phone right then and there and call 972-934-8900. That's the Green Team and say, hey, here's my situation. Let me tell you what happened. Here's the details. And I'm telling you, I've been telling you, they bring you on as a client. Say, great day for you. Almost cussed right there. And here's why. They walk you through the entire process. We had one of our listeners recently reached out to Greening Law. They took them on as a client. And here's the deal. They walk you through this process. Why? Because this thing can be intimidating. It can be scary. It can be long. It's a process. Greening Law has been through it thousands of times. They know how it works. They bring you calmness. They get rid of that anxiety. It lets you focus on two things and two things only, healing and renewal. Get your mind right, get your body right, and get your life back. That's what they want you to do. And so 972-934-8900 is the number if you've ever been involved in an accident. And it doesn't matter whether it's an 18-wheeler, whether it's a workplace accident. If somebody else's negligence has caused you some harm, you got to pick up the phone and give them a call. Now check this out. They handle everything, literally everything. You need a doctor? They'll find a doctor, set up an appointment for you. You need a specialist? They'll find a specialist, set up an appointment for you. And check this out. They don't get paid unless you get paid. So you don't have to worry about, hey, how can I afford this? Hey, what about this? What about that? No. You focus on what? Healing and renewal. Get your mind right, get your body right, and get your life back. That's what Greening Law wants you to do. They work it out for you. They walk you through the process, when to walk, when to run, when to hold tight. Let them do the heavy lifting for you. Hey, man, speaking of heavy lifting, I heard a rumor this week, and we've got to get in touch with my boy Todd Archer and find out the latest on what I just heard. Now, Archer is brought to you each and every Wednesday by my friends at Smokey John's Barbecue. This week, the specialty meat is the garlic sausage. I can't really think of anything better than that. Garlic is my favorite spice. Sausage is one of my favorite foods. Garlic sausage must be divine. It must be to live for. It must be delicious. Y'all know why I'm laughing, right? Right? Why am I laughing? Because Joe thought I was going to say something else. And he was ready to cuss me out about it. Where's Archer? It's love in your mouth.
Hello.
What up, bro?
What's going on?
Not much, man. It's a beautiful day out here in Dallas, Fort Worth. How'd you enjoy your trip to Boston?
It was good until we got some food poisoning on Saturday night. So.
Are you pooping me? Dude, I was going to say something else, but I was like, that'd be a bad pun I wasn't trying to make. Do you know the cause of it?
Maybe, but too many options to mention, unfortunately.
Let me tell y'all something.
Made for an interesting flight. It was an interesting 4 hour and a half hour flight home. So let me tell you
was
that.
Was it just you or was it you and Courtney?
It was all three of us.
Oh, wow. All three of y'all got it?
Yeah.
Wow. That's terrible, man. Terrible. I've only had it, I think, once and a half times. One time I wasn't really sure, but the one time I had it, dude, it was, I was taking a weekend, don't y'all judge me, I was taking a weekend trip with my first wife. We had gone down to San Antonio, we'd had some fajitas, and about an hour and a half later, man, I had stomach cramps like, oh my God, what is going on? And I was literally either in the bathroom or on the bed curled up, probably for a day. Yeah, so I feel your pain, man. That's one of my, and that was probably 25, 30 years ago. So the fact that I remember it that clearly lets y'all know what it's like.
Why would we judge you for having some fajitas in San Antonio?
I think he was saying the first wife. It was the first wife comment.
Okay.
No, given the divorce rate in America, the fact that I had two wives is really not that unusual. But some people out there in podcast land are a little more judgmental than other people in podcast land. So I was trying to be proactive in that. Thank you, gentlemen, for that.
Hey, two wives, six wives, four wives. I don't give a damn.
As long as you settle on one who eventually makes you happy.
All right.
I'm not getting involved.
Both of y'all, been married one time.
You ain't lying.
For 20 plus years.
32 years. 33 this year.
All right. How long you been married, Arch?
I'll be 25 in June.
Right. Well, I got. Well, let me just shut up. sometimes you got to edit yourself on the fly.
Yeah, there you go.
And I decided that to be. So, hey, dog, I was minding my own business this week. I know y'all find that hard to believe. And ESPN's Jeremy Fowler says the Cowboys. Now, that's somebody else may have said it. That's just where I saw it first because I wasn't really hunting for it. The Cowboys and Zeke Elliott may be open for a return. And y'all know. I'm about as big a Zeke fan as there is, and I think this is like the worst idea ever. So, I imagine you snooped around a little bit, Arch. What have you heard?
Why is it the worst idea ever?
I don't like spinning the block with older players. Two at 29, that's old for a running back. And three, I think sometimes, especially with this team, it's time to move forward, not look in the rearview mirror. Four, I haven't seen him be overly productive in about 3 years. And I'm a Zeke guy.
So let's say they sign him to a minimum veteran salary benefit contract, and he counts 1.3 million or 1.0, whatever it is. I don't even know what it is against the cap.
All right.
Does that change your mind? Because you're not signing him to be Zeke of 2016 to 19. You're really signing him to do what he did last year in New England, which from the reports up there, did well. I mean, you can look at the numbers. He averaged 3.5 yards a carry, but good teammate, good guy. And honestly, they need another running back. They're going to draft one. And they need another one anyway, so it's him or Dalvin Cook, basically. I guess J.K. Dobbins, but he might be going somewhere else and he's injured all the time anyway. So
he's another Buckeye, so I'd be happy to have him. I think I don't have any doubt that Zeke would be a terrific teammate, show guys how to prepare, make sure that they're on point with what they're supposed to do, all that kind of stuff. I don't have any doubt about that. Now he's not going to play special teams, so it hampers you a little bit. I don't know.
Rico Dowdle can play special teams. I mean,
Yeah.
There's not a lot of number two running backs that play special teams anyway. I'm trying to talk you into it, I guess. Maybe that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah,
maybe even though it's not going to work. But again, like...
you know, spinning the block is just hard. I think it's... and I don't know, Arch. Maybe you can come up with... maybe Herschel Walker is a good example. Maybe Herschel Walker is a good example. I'm trying to figure out, like, it's always different to me when you've been a star somewhere spinning the block and coming back to be, like, just a guy and a role player and this and that. It's different if that's what you've been, you know, you've been the third corner, you come back 3 years later, you're the third corner. But when you've been the star and the city's been yours, and then you coming back and you just one of the 53, it seems to me to be a very hard thing. But Herschel Walker did it when he came back. He had been a star in Dallas, and he came back as a kick returner and a backup running back, and whatever y'all need me to do, I'll do.
So that's really for Zeke to deal with, not for the Cowboys to deal with. Like, he'll have to understand that his role is, again, you're not 2016 to 2019 or 20 or however you want to carry it out, Zeke. You're a guy who's going to be a role player. So that's on him before he even signs here to wrap his mind around that.
I'm trying to think, man. This is a great conversation, I think. Could you go back to the Dallas Morning News? Well, that doesn't even fit you. Like, I don't know. I think it's hard
if
to
I,
go back.
Well, let me put it – well, put it in this – if I didn't have a job and I still wanted to work, yeah, I could go back there.
Well, I was going to say, but you started as a beat guy. So could you go back there and cover high schools?
Sure. I mean, how much are they paying me? Right? I mean, again, I have no job, so.
Well, what are the circumstances? I left Sigma. Well, who I worked for, and I was in the warehouse, and I went to the service for 5 years. I got out of the service. I came back to the warehouse because I needed a job. And then I became Big Joe in the Big Rig. I went and drove trucks for him. So, yeah, if you need a job, if you want a job, if the circumstances, you know, or what they are, you're going to get a job. I didn't.
You know, what's interesting is I just got through I was working out this morning, and I tried to grab some weight.
Joe, did you catch that little humble brag right there?
Yeah. I was trying to determine if I was going to say it because I knew I was going to catch it. So since y'all brought it out, I might as well tell you the whole story.
What did we bring out, though?
And, you know, a couple weeks ago, I did 100. So I go, okay, I'm going to move up from 90 to 95. Oof. But the 95s felt heavy as hell this morning. And so I put them down. I got them up. I did my set. And on the second set, my boy said, hey, you want these 95s again? And I was like, I literally said, nah, man, sometimes you got to put your ego in check. Give me these 90s and let's just finish this set. And so I'm sitting up here talking this morning about putting your ego in check. And that's really what we're talking about with Zeke. Can you put your ego in check and take a lesser role and be cool with it? And both of y'all have said, he may be like, yeah, Dallas is home. I still got my crib in Frisco. You know, I'm playing with my boys, so yeah, ain't no big deal.
So, and so that's one part of it. And then from the Cowboys' perspective, right? They need an. We all agree they need another running back, right? Even if when they're going to draft one, you assume would be the number one back, if not week one by week two, however it works out, right? So, of the guys that are currently available, Zeke's got to be on that, and they know Zeke. So, and he knows them, and that, so that gives it. But the other guys like Boston Scott, Matt Breida, Kareem Hunt, Rashad Penny, 34-year-old Latavius Murray. You know what I'm saying? Like, they need somebody. Cam Akers. So, you know, I mentioned Dalvin Cook earlier. Like, I mean, there's not like they can be choosy about what they're going to do.
And then, I mean,
because
I guess
they
have
played this thing.
Out of all them guys,
tell me
he's going to
be your goal line guy.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I can wrap my head around it. It just seems, you know, maybe I'm scarred from the past where the Cowboys have, in the past, they held on to guys too long. And, you know, some organizations get rid of guys a year early, even if they go out else and have another good year somewhere. And then this organization historically has held on to guys too long. So I guess I need to take it as on a case-by-case basis instead of lumping everybody together.
Right. And, look, J.K. Dobbins would interest me, but the guy's played 9 games or whatever it is, right, in the last 3 years or something like that with all the injuries that he's had. So
yeah, he's a good back and he's a Buckeye, but he's hurt all the damn time.
Right. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is another one that's out there. Like, okay, he's been okay. What's he done as a first-round pick in Kansas City? Like, he won Super Bowls, I guess. That was good. But, you know, he lost the job to Pacheco. So, I understand why the Cowboys could be interested, and I certainly understand why Zeke could be interested, because he has no job. Here's a place that he knows. Like, every running back who is available should want to play for the Cowboys right now because they don't have a running back. Right? I mean, that's not brain surgery there. It's like, if you're an offensive tackle at the moment, wouldn't you want to look at the Cowboys too?
Yeah.
They don't have a left tackle at the moment, right. Provided you don't think one of the Austin Richards, Matt Waletzko, Josh Ball guys can do something that we've never seen them do. Right. So if I'm a veteran, I'd be like, that wouldn't be a bad place to go to. So, you know, but if it happens, it'll give us something to write about. I wonder if on Wednesdays, if Zeke will go right to the front of the line in the media deal and step up to the podium, we're going to be like, yeah, we're okay this week, Zeke.
Yeah, we good, dog. speaking of the draft, how do you see the needs matching up with the board? Because you're always a best player available at the position of need guy anyway, despite what franchise they have tried to tell us over the years.
Well, I always hate you always take the best player available. Well, if the best player available at 24 is a quarterback, are you really going to take a quarterback? Get out of here. I mean, that's why I don't believe you take the best player available that's why there's a draft to fill your needs. Now, usually the Cowboys have done a better job in free agency of covering some of those needs with a veteran Band-Aid, but they've not done that yet, obviously. So, you know, look, it's an offensive line strong draft. I don't know if the really good tackles will make it to 24. I think the guys that could make it to 24 are either projects, haven't played very much, or might be right tackles only. So that might be a little bit of a risk to take there. So that's why I look at a couple of centers, the Oregon kid, the Duke kid, Jackson Powers and Barton, and say, okay, are they plug and play guys from day one at center like Travis Frederick was? You got Travis Frederick at 31 when you traded down in 2013. Kind of got lucky there because he was the last guy that you had available after you made that big move down. I think from that perspective, it plays out well. I think where they'll get a running back, well, the board seems to – I hate using that term because who knows who's board is what.
Yeah.
Right. My board doesn't matter. Your board doesn't matter. The only one that matters is what the Cowboys think. But it appears like they could find a running back in the second or third round to come in and play right away, much like DeMarco Murray did when he came in as a third-round pick. And then, you know, linebackers may be a little spotty, and there's some question on guys, but it would be interesting as we learn some of these 30-visit names to see how many linebackers are on that list. And then, you know, they need an edge player, too, having lost Dorrance Armstrong and Dante Fowler. They can talk about Sam Williams and Junior Fajoco and these guys maybe stepping up in their second and third seasons. But again, I maybe would still look at that spot as well. And I'm probably missing something. Cornerback, maybe?
Yeah, they could always use a corner. Now, they do a good job in college free agency. They seem like they almost always find one or two guys
over there. Yeah, but you don't live in there to find guys that help right away.
No. This is very true. You're surprised and you go, oh, look what we found. Now, that being said, you see any way they take something other than an offensive lineman in the first round?
Give me a blinking light like CD that falls to them. Maybe that's where you change your mind and you say if the sixth player on your board is available at number 24, you take it, I guess. Theoretically, they didn't need CD when they took him.
Right.
Maybe if one of the wide receivers is there, cornerback. But if they're starting the season right now, tell me who your left tackle is.
No, this is true.
Right. So that's why I go with the offensive lineman, but I don't know if I – like the Mims kid in Georgia, I think he started 8 games. I want a guy who started more than 8 – has more than 8 games of experience to walk in and be a starter. And, again, are some of these guys right tackles only and not have the ability to play on the left? And I don't think they moved Terrence Steele, so – to go back to the original question, they'll make the board set up for their needs, right?
Right.
So, and that's sometimes that can get you in trouble, but we'll find out.
Now, let me ask you this. What do you think the odds are they move down to try to pick up an additional second or third?
Yeah, I guess that's like you do that if you're all wiped out on what you're getting. Because there's always a risk that you're going to be.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Isn't there always a risk that you're going to move down too far and then end up with scraps and not get the, a need?
Yeah.
A player at a need more at 24 than you would at 30. It's all a risk. And Jerry says they're all in, so I'm gonna say, hey, let's go and let's go all in, move and trade down.
Yeah, let that bullshit go. We all in. This is what it looked like, huh?
This is a frustrated fan base right here.
Yeah, big time.
Nah, this is what's your burning question heading into the next few weeks with your Dallas Cowboys?
It's all about the draft at this point because in free agency, you're picking over low cost guys at the moment. So it's, I think we've done this for years and we've written about it. We've talked about it. Find out who the 30 visits are. Those are the guys that they're most likely going to draft. I think it was 5 guys last year, 4 guys the year before that. Like that's how they roll. Like they're open with who they like. And if you know who's coming in, right? And nor should they. If teams are hiding, if they're using 30 visits as subterfuge, shame on them. Like, dude, those are the guys you want to get to know the most. And I'm curious as to how other teams' 30 visits rate on guys they end up drafting. Right? Like, are the Giants the same way? Are there 30 visits? Are they drafting 5 of their guys? This is with how they've attacked, and I have a story coming on ESPN. I think it's going to go next week on their scout draft process, and how they take the pool and minnow it all the way down to 100 names, right, from May until now. There's more pressure on the scouting department this year than there's been in quite a while because of how this team is done in free agency and the pieces that they've lost. Like, this can't be, hope we get some guys. No, you got to get some guys. Like, last year, they've used the fallback of the 2023 draft class not really contributing because, it was such a talented roster. Well, I thought you had a talented roster in 22, and those guys contributed. I thought you had a talented roster in 21. Those guys contributed. So, after what happened last year, there's pressure on the scouting department to find the right guys and make sure that they play right away.
Let me run something past y'all. I had a guy, friend of mine from the gym, who I've known for a few years. He sent me a tweet yesterday. And he says, hey, 2020, 7 picks, 3 starters, 2 on the team. 2021, 11 picks, 2 starters, 7 on the team. 2022, 9 picks, 4 starters, 7 on the team. 23, 8 picks, no starters, 8 on the team. 4-year total, 35 picks, 9 starters, 24 on the team. I don't think they're really that good at drafting. And I said, well, you just pull out the Cowboys numbers. How does that compare to everybody else? I said, I think they're pretty good at drafting. I think it's an inexact science. And so, you know, it's much like hitting a baseball. You know, your best teams are only going to get so many right. But they seem to do a pretty good job. They've always got guys they want to re-sign. They draft a lot of elite players. So I think they're a pretty good drafting team. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think they're a good drafting team. And I think you hit it. Like, tell me the other team's success rates as well. You know, and like, I'm trying to think of a guy that they've drafted in the last, that's not like Biadasz. Well, was that a failed draft pick because he's no longer here?
Dude. Yeah, they go on to play with other teams. Yeah.
But I mean, he started three of his 4 years here. Like, I mean, okay, you didn't keep him. So is that a failed draft pick? Is, you know, Neville Gallimore, I can say that one is a third round pick. Probably didn't work out as well as you wanted it to work out because that's a third round pick is supposed to be a starter and he never really was that guy. So, you know, is that a failed? I don't know if it's a failure. So, I think they draft well. I don't think we're shilling for Will McClay here by saying that. I mean, you can look at all the Pro Bowlers that they've drafted and it's not always been first round guys. It's a lot of them are first round guys, but Deron Bland just made the Pro Bowl and he was a fifth round pick. So Biadasz was a fourth round pick. He was named to the Pro Bowl.
Jake Ferguson's you know, a good player.
Right. And he just went to a Pro Bowl. So, you know, the 21 draft hasn't really lit it up for them. That was beyond Micah. I mean, Kelvin Joseph, bad pick. And this is where, you fall into the cowboy land of Jerry only gets blamed for the bad picks and the scouts get Supreme Court justice jobs for life because they never made it. It's always it's on Jerry. But,
right.
Oh, but Oso Odigizuwa, pretty good pick. Like, as a third rounder, Chauncey Golson, I don't know. He's been just kind of a guy. Another year for him, we'll see what happens. But, you know, none of the other guys, as I'm looking through the list, have really done much in that draft. So, you know, I think they're – let's start with the premise of nobody can really draft well, but the Cowboys do it as good a job as probably the top 5% of the teams in the league.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think they're a good drafting team. They've had a lot of elite players. And they also have had a lot of guys that they didn't keep who went on and played 3, 4, 5 years with other teams. Because you can't pay everybody, whether it's Connor McGovern or Connor Williams or, you know, any number of guys. So I think
you mentioned that. So in the last 3 years, it's gone Connor Williams, Connor McGovern, and Tyler Biadasz. We all know that offensive linemen are hard to find. And you better do a good job of finding guys and then securing them on a second contract. Why are they not securing these guys to a second contract? Are there issues beyond finances that they didn't want to extend themselves on any of those three guys? Or is there any kind of ego involved that says, hey, we found those guys in the second and third rounds and fourth rounds. We'll find the next batch of guys. Well, they've not really done that the last couple of years.
You know, that's a good question. I think the conversation becomes, do we want to – what did Tyler Biadasz end up getting? $10 million a year?
That might have been the fake number. I don't know what the real number was.
Okay. Well, let's say the fake number is $10 million. You're like, Tyler McGovern, I mean, Biotis is good, but we don't want to pay him $10 million a year.
Right, but I would also say why are they waiting till it gets to the what? This is the type of guy that they would have tried to have signed sooner.
Okay, I'll get that. Now that one that's a good question for them. Like, how come after he was a starter, you say he's established, he's a solid player? Let's treat you like a baseball guy. Let's give you a little bit more up front than you deserve, but we'll keep you away from the $10 million range, and it's kind of a win-win for us. And maybe it always comes back to they want to win every deal as opposed to win-win situations. And that's what I think anyway.
I can't disagree with the element of they want to win the deal. Now, when we go to a car dealership, don't we want to win the deal too? Every time, right? So...
Yeah,
probably why I suck at what I want to say is,
now, you know, you brought up this conversation with the man who wants to spend 12 hours at the car dealer, and he just outlasts the guy. To the guy just says, "Just, I'm gonna give you the paperwork, Big Joe. You just fill it in. I'm tired of dealing and talking to you." He's that guy. Me, I show up with the loan already from the credit union. Like, give me this. I don't really want to talk to you at all. So we're completely. Where are you at in the car dealer conversations, Arch? Me and Joe are at
I can't stand this. I can't. If this takes me more than an hour, I don't want to do it.
Well, you got it wrong, Jock. If I'm dealing with somebody from a position where their credit is iffy, I can outlast them. If I'm dealing for myself, which my last two or three deals, I already have financing. I'm beating you up on your numbers to beat the credit union. Right, you know what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? I got my own
fight. I don't want the fight. I'm not interested in the fight. If I could do it without talking to anybody, I would. Just drop it off at my house.
Yeah, I'm a numbers guy. So, yeah, we're gonna fight that. We're going to do that.
Yeah, I can't stand that.
So, I think we're all trying to win, but we also understand there's some compromise involved. I think the Cowboys, or, you know, I know it's a try to win for each. Or, you know, I know when I've won and I don't have to have every nickel. I think the Cowboys too many times, they just try to beat you over the head. Like a fair deal might be, you know, whatever, and they're like, no, we need more. They just try to beat your ass on the deal, I think. And so I think it's hard for them to get deals done. And then when they try to do that to guys who have leverage, they take the same mindset and they get their ass kicked.
Well, and this is where I asked Jerry this on the bus at the combine. That so back in the day, they were able to keep all their guys. It never really got contentious with just go to the quote modern era guys here since we've been covering the team together. The Romos, D. Ware, Newman, Witten, help me out, Brady James. It never Scandrick. It never got to the point of contention because I think there was more of a relationship that was built between that there was between the players and management then. And now it seems like players are more transactional in their feelings and want to make sure they're getting every little bit of it. Go back. Remember DeMarcus Lawrence. Hold on. Let me finish. When DeMarcus Lawrence signed his deal and Stephen Jones said, he said, see, you know, we got this salary cap to deal with here, DeMarcus. And DeMarcus said, that's your problem. That's not my problem. Which is absolutely the right answer for DeMarcus to give because he has to think about himself in this sport. I get it. Like, that's and it is for the Cowboys to figure out. And I think it's become more transactional for a lot of these guys that they want to get theirs, which they're absolutely entitled to. And the Cowboys either have been slow to adapt to that model or don't want to adapt to that model.
Yeah, I think the players, as the game has evolved and they've seen how, in general, no matter what team you're talking about, as soon as you lose a step, they just get rid of you. Or even if you have a great year, Aaron Jones, they tell you to take a pay cut or we'll get rid of you. I think that the players are now like, I used to think there was some loyalty if I performed at the higher level. Now I realize there really isn't. And so I think the teams and the franchises are every bit as transactional as the players, and the players have finally understood it. And they're just like, you know what? They're going to treat me, as soon as I cease to be the least little bit productive in their mind, I'm out. Or I got to take a pay cut, whether I deserve one or not. And then if I ask for a raise because I outperform my deal, they're like, hey, what about this contract you signed?
So, right. I mean, absolutely.
I think the game has just evolved into that, and that's why. I mean, it's like Dak. Dak is like, hey, don't even, you know, for the most part, why don't you just deal with Todd? You know, and I'll dip in here and there, but I don't want to have no running dialogue with y'all. Y'all talk to Todd France, and I hired him to do that.
And that's why you're at the situation you're at now, because back in the day, as we know, they would talk to Romo and Witten and D-Ware and those guys, and
Tell the story of how Romo got his first big deal done in the closet, in the broom closet at Texas.
Well, that wasn't even the big deal. That was the
first one.
Yeah, that was the first one.
$5 million. That wasn't the big. Yeah, it was like, you know, it was before a preseason game, and Bill said we're not going to play it, and Jerry and their, the way Jerry tells it, they're like knee to knee on Romo and stare him in the face, and he's like, look, if you guys don't have the money, you don't have any money in me, you're not going to ever play me. And that was when Parcells walked out and said, we got ourselves a quarterback. So now I'll also say, look at like the deals that Tony did after that, or even that one really, it lasted a year because he signed the new deal after that, were 6-year deals. Like, so I think there was more give on the players. Like, the Cowboys will pay the cash.
Right.
What the Cowboys want is the structure of the deal to allow them to spread salary cap hits out over years, like, and being able to restructure contracts in that way. So that's why, like, Dak's win, the 4-year deal, was so major for him, because after 2 years, really, the Cowboys should have gone back to him and said, let's get back and do this again. Yeah. And then maybe they tried and they were just rebuffed. Now you're in the situation where you're at now, where the longer this goes, the more it looks like the as I wrote last week, the deadline of deadlines for Dak's contract is March. Oh gosh, now I can't remember. It's the 12th, March 12th. Let's say it might be the 13th, March 12th, 2025. Because if he doesn't sign a contract by then all of that dead money comes forward against the cap next year, and he counts $40 million or whatever it would be against cap. If they sign him before March 12th, 2025, then it'll be, his cap number starts at $25 million, and then you have the prorated years out that they've added this year on it. So that's the deadline of deadlines on Dak's deal.
Now, I've always had a hard time believing he's going to come back if he's not signed before the season starts, because you're that close to true free agency. It just seems like, I need to explore and just check it out. And if you check it out, somebody's going to blow you away and be like, we have no quarterback. We think we have a team that's ready to compete. Here you go.
Now come up with that team. I played this game out. Come up with that team. Well, who is that team going to be?
Well, see, I don't know that we know, because like, if he were an unrestricted free agent this year, Atlanta or Minnesota.
So we can't play that game.
I know. No, but Atlanta and Minnesota might be that team. I don't know that we thought before the season Atlanta and Minnesota would be those teams. So
Minnesota, you know, could be that team next year.
Minnesota could be that team next year. Maybe the Ravens.
Does he want to go? What do you want to go there?
Money talk. And you got Justin Jefferson.
Justin
Jefferson going to re-sign there?
Yep.
Let's just look at it right now, and what we know of the teams that have quarterbacks in place, or have just drafted a quarterback early and they like, or will draft a quarterback early this year. There's nobody in the AFC East that would go to him. I'm assuming Tua will re-sign with the Dolphins, and I'm assuming the Patriots will draft a quarterback at number 3. There's no one. Maybe
let's look at
Pittsburgh in the AFC North. Maybe, right. But you still have Justin Fields and whatever happened. Okay, AFC South. Tennessee. We'll give you Tennessee. None of the other three. And the AFC West. I'm assuming Denver's going to have a quarterback, but maybe not. So that would be an option. The Raiders would maybe they move up to get a quarterback, but maybe not. But we'll give them that. It's number three.
You got to give stupid. You got to give stupid a chance when you're talking about the Raiders. They do stupid stuff so, up there.
Right. So the Giants, they might take a quarterback this year, but okay, let's throw the Giants in that mix.
But see, we're already at five teams.
That's four. But now, hold on, I'm not done with this. So there's going to be nobody in the. I mean, again, we got to. Minnesota will be five. New Orleans will be six. The Tampa design, and then in the West, maybe Seattle. So what? That was right. Seven teams. And let's just for giggles say there's eight. Now, of those eight teams, how many of those teams are going to be able to afford $60 million quarterback? Let's say three of them. And I realize it only takes one, but let's say that one team that can't afford him is a place where Dak would want to play. So, again, it's all a risk, like how the Cowboys are playing this, because all it takes is one to do something that the Cowboys would never do. I got you.
Now, I do, as we continue this conversation, I will say, and I told Clarence this, you know, I say a lot of it's on the team, but it's also on Dak. Because there's nothing that you can't buy at a salary of $52 million that you can't buy at a salary of $57 million or whatever it is. You're past the point of looking at price tags. You know, so whatever you want in life, you can have. Whatever baby MJ wants, she too can have. So it's not about money. Now it's about, you know, paving the way for the guys after me to have their deals and all of that stuff. And so, you know, at a certain point, it just depends on how much do you want and how much is a good deal for you where you don't feel like you're screwing guys coming down the road and you're doing what's good for you.
But does a player really care about that?
Seriously. Some guys do. I think most guys don't.
Is that a Tom Brady type of thing?
That's it.
Tom Brady didn't care about the other because he took less all the time. And less is always a comparative because – he didn't really take that much less is what we all think, but regardless.
Okay.
But, like, I don't think guys are like, well, I got to think about the quarterback 5 years from now who make sure he's going to do okay. Screw that.
Well, I think
who cares what the rest of the guys do?
Well,
you know, in the NFL, man, it's such a short career that you really got to do what's best for you, which is why their union is the worst because everybody's like, I got to do what's best for me. So, yeah, I get it. I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating question.
Right.
Nobody knows the answer. I think it'd be weird to see him in another uniform. You just don't see quarterbacks.
If you just got me thinking about that, like guys we've seen in different uniforms. We saw Emmett come back as a Cardinal. Saw Jason Witten play as a Raider.
No, we didn't.
Saw Larry Allen play as a – Jason Witten played for the Raiders for a year.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
For a year?
He showed me. Yeah.
I forgot about that shit.
Yeah. How you like that?
Larry Allen. I gotta go look up Larry Allen in the Niners.
Yeah.
That's because he retired and came back, right?
Witten, yeah. It was after Monday Night. Came back, played for Did Monday Night Football, came back, played a year for the Cowboys, then played a year for the Raiders.
Okay.
Under Gruden. How do you not know this?
Yeah.
Because he caught 13 passes for 69 yards. He did score two touchdowns, though.
One of them was like a game winner in the last play of the game.
I just have no recollection of Witt with the Raiders. That just blew my mind. I just have no recollection of it. It's like
it wasn't like 10 years ago. It was like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's probably like me. I know Dorsett played with the Broncos, but I have no memory of Dorsett. Like, I don't remember any run.
He had 1,000 yards with the Broncos.
Tony D had 1,000 yards with the Broncos?
Look it up.
You know I am. I mean, I don't doubt you because you got a vast warehouse of useless knowledge.
Roger that. Joe Namath with the Rams.
Okay, Tony Joe Montana Dorsett did not have 1,000 yards.
What do you have?
703.
Close enough. Close enough for government work. There you go.
He did score 5 touchdowns, though.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't remember any of that. We'll have to do a segment on that one time. Guys who spent their last year somewhere else.
Marcus Allen with the Chiefs, Joe Montana with the Chiefs. You know,
it seemed like Marcus Allen played a couple other spots, but maybe he didn't.
No, he was just the Chief.
And the Raiders.
And the Raiders, yeah.
But, I mean, he played several years with the Chiefs, maybe.
Yeah, he did.
Not just one. I'm talking about guys who just played 1 year somewhere, like OJ in San Francisco.
Yeah. I think Joe Namath with the Rams, I think. I don't think he played but a year there, maybe.
Yeah, and he wasn't very good. Like
Zeke Elliott with the Patriots.
Yeah. Some people are going to forget Jerry Rice played with, like, Seattle at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now here go the question. Where did Adrian Peterson play his last year?
Washington? No, Seattle.
I want to say it was Seattle. But I can't swear to it. Like Dickerson with the Falcons.
Oh, you was bringing up Herschel Walker toward the end of his career. He was with the Falcons and the Eagles playing special teams. I think he played with the Eagles. He played special teams his last year.
Dallas, his last team is the question. When he came back the second time.
No, I think.
No, Dallas was his last team.
Was he?
Yep.
Wow. Seattle was Adrian Peterson's last team. Played for Tennessee.
Yeah.
Played for Detroit.
No, it's wild when that happens, man.
So, wow, he played for New Orleans. Jeez. He played for after Minnesota, he played for Arizona, New Orleans, Washington, Detroit, Tennessee, and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't remember Good him Lord. In Tennessee.
I remember him in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans, he got into it with Sean Payton. Imagine that.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah.
But, you know, I think that's good, for real, and I'm not saying this to chuckle. I think AD was broke at that time. He's like, wherever, you know, have football, we'll, you know, I just need a check. So, wherever. But anyway, that's a very interesting perspective right there. That's a good conversation. Before we let you go, since we kept you this long, Arch, what's your tournament? What's your thoughts on the basketball tournament?
Having seen UConn in person, it's so damn impressive. Like they can beat you however you want to be beaten. they can pound it down to Klingon. They can get you in transition. They're just, I'm not going to say that they're a lock to win this thing because you just never know with college kids, but they just lock you down. Like the game against, I mean, a 30-0 run in the Elite Eight is wow. Just ridiculous. I mean, that doesn't happen. And then the San Diego State game, I was with a buddy of mine, and we're watching the game, and I go, don't look at the scoreboard. How much are they up right now? And he's like, I don't know, 8? He's like, no, 16. Like, you don't even realize it until you look up at the scoreboard that what the score is of the game. You know, they're an incredible team to watch. Him and Zach Eddy going against each other would be a pretty fierce battle with Klingon. And then, you know, NC State, if they can beat Purdue the first time, I mean, God bless them. I mean, in my bracket, I had NC State losing their first round game because I just thought they spent it all in the ACC tournament and had nothing left.
Right.
So, and then here they are. I mean, it's
DJ Byrne.
Here's a question.
You know what I like? Everybody's talking about, hey, that guy should be a left tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, he's big.
What are we doing? He's big, but okay.
You know, my first thought
what
was,
are we doing?
Yeah.
I think I've heard all of that, obviously. And my initial thought is always football is about a mentality. And if you're not a nasty dude on a football field, I think it's just hard for you to function. And he don't necessarily strike me as a nasty dude. Maybe he is, but he don't strike me as that.
He basketball like, nasty. He ain't NFL.
Like
ain't
Rico, Rico Gathers never should have played football. Rico Gathers should have gone to Europe and made $500,000 a year for 10 years.
Yeah,
that's what he should have done. Like, he was never going to be a football player. But everybody, oh, it's Antonio Gates. Oh, Tony Gonzalez. Oh, they were great basketball players. Mo Alley Cox. They was guys that it's just a different world, man. Like, some guys do, some guys. But Gates played football and Gonzalez played football. It wasn't like they were just basketball players. So,
what do you think? How did Dan Hurley turn this team into this machine? Because his first year at UConn, they're 16-17. His second year, they're 19-12. Neither one of those years did they make the tournament.
He's got a system in place that. Well, A, they're getting good players again, right?
Right.
Okay. So how did he do that? I don't know. But again, if you look at that team, okay, the Newton kid's a pro, the Castle kid's a pro. I don't think the Spencer kid's – I don't think he's an NBA pro. Klingon might be in the league. Caravan might be in the league. But he's got guys that play together – and aren't thinking about, in my mind, the league. And that stuff just kind of perpetuates on where you're going. Like, that team lost, I think, 5 of their top 8 scorers last year. I think I'm right on that. Maybe 3 of the first 5 or whatever it is. And they just bring guys in that know their role. Might be what we've talked about before in football, Jacques. They know what they're not. And they don't try and do the things that they can't do. Caravan is a shooter. So he's not going to sit here and try and take guys off the dribble.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what these guys do. And they do it so well. They play to their strengths so well. They don't try and expose their weaknesses. And that's great coaching to me. And he's done an unbelievable job.
How long have them guys been in the program? You know, because guys move around so much, if you can keep them together.
Well, the Spencer kid's in his first year. He came in from Rutgers. The Castle kid's a freshman, I think, or the Newton kid's a freshman. Like, and Caravan's been in the program the whole time. Klingon's been in the program the whole time. So he's got – and really, their most important player early on in the Illinois game might have been the Diarra kid coming off the bench, a little point guard who – help change that game. So, I mean, they've just got a lot of guys that know how to play and really don't worry about anything about than just winning the game. And that's, again, that's credit to coaching.
Yeah.
Now, everybody talks about them being such a dominant team. And so I'm just up here chuckling because they did lose 3 games, not very many. Do you know who beat them?
Now you're going to tell me, like, well – I'm going to say, I know Creighton beat them because Creighton shot like 80% from 3 in one game against them.
Because Creighton blew them out just before the turn.
Yeah, that was a game. Creighton shot unbelievable from 3.
85-66. Before that, I'm not going to count them, but they had won about 15 in a row. Seton Hall beat them 75-60. That's probably the result of just playing in a conference where they went on the road and ran into a buzzsaw. And then Kansas, when Kansas had a squad, beat them 69-65 in December.
Yeah.
But no, I'm looking. I haven't seen them play at all, and so I'm looking forward to watching them play in the Final Four and get an up close look at this dominance because they've been destroying people in the tournament. Yeah, I mean, I think we all expected it, but they've even taken that to a whole nother level. And you're right, 30-0 run. In the tournament is insane in the Elite Eight.
No doubt.
But all right. Todd, we appreciate the great conversation this morning, man. Hope you're feeling
that good. That was long today.
Yeah, that makes up for being short last week, man. But there you go. Give your wife and kids a hug, and we'll talk to you
all
soon.
Right. All right. Sounds good. See you, fellas.
Yep.
All right, brother. That's Todd Argent. Brought to you each and every Wednesday by Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird, about 5 minutes north of downtown Dallas. It is home of the Jam Session Bowl, which is fantastic. Now, Jam Session Bowl is on the secret menu. So you walk in there, you just have to ask for it. You ain't going to see it on the menu. Just know that it exists. Just know that it is to live for. And what it is it's a bowl. Let's see, it's got a mac and cheese base that Joe rocks with. It's got a mashed potato base that I prefer. Then you get to pick 2 out of 5 smoked meats. Quick exit ramp. Hey, Dave, have you ever had the Jam Session Bowl? Dave's our content creator. Now, Dave's on this whole kind of change his way of eating diet, no sugar right now. So he ain't really trying to go have the Jam Session Bowl. But as soon as he takes, he's on a diet for a short period of time. Once he gets his goal weight and he's going to go back to a lifestyle, then we'll go over to the Jam Session Bowl and check it out. So back to the Jam Session Bowl. You get your choice, 2 out of 5 smoked meats. And then all that stuff they put on the loaded baked potato, like chives and bacon bits and cheese and sour cream, all that stuff, a little butter if you want it. They throw that on top, man. Then they ask the magic question. You want it drizzled? You want it drenched? That's what they're Smokey John's barbecue sauce. Either way, it's fantastic. Trust me on that. I prefer a drizzle. And then, you know what? If you got a little shorty, 3 of y'all can eat off of it. No cap. If it's 2 of y'all, y'all can split it, man. Trust me, you can split it and take some home, eat it for dinner. Easy. It works like that. It's that much food. It is to live for. It is fantastic. I have sent, I want to say without lying, I've sent a whole bunch of people over there to check it out over the last 3 or 4 years. Dozens of people have gone. Real talk. No one has yet come back and said, you know what? That Jam Session Bowl was a bunch of hype. It was hype. Everybody says, oh my God, there's a bunch of food. It was fantastic. And I felt like being in a food coma afterwards. That's how good it is. Real talk. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. So go to Smokey John's Barbecue. Get the Jam Session Bowl. You can thank me later. Why? It is love in your mouth. Y'all didn't think I wasn't going to miss that, did you? Now, if you need Smokey John's in your life a little more immediately than that, you can go to SmokeyJohns.com, click on the marketplace, and get the rub or the sauce. That's the rub right here. Or the sauce sent to the crib. Be there in a couple days. No cap. If you need it, like, I got to have it now. Go to HEB. It's on the shelves. They got HEBs all over North Texas. They got them in Waxahachie. They got them in Burlington. They got them in Frisco. They got them in Allen. They got them in McKinney. They got them everywhere. Just stop by HEB. Grab one. Get one to a friend. It's that good. And enjoy Smokey John's Barbecue. Why? Because number one is good. Number two, they bring you Todd Archer and Clarence D. Hill Jr. twice a week on the Jock Talk podcast. Now, we finna skip around since Todd took so much time. Let's go to the block, dog. Let's talk about a couple things. Joe. I think we're going to talk about this first. Rasheed Rice, the former SMU receiver, grew up in North Richland Hills, hometown boy. He's in a bit of what we would call hot water. He was allegedly racing a Lamborghini down Central Expressway. Now, that's bad enough, y'all. Really, it is. He was allegedly doing it at 6 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon evening. Do you know how crowded Central is at 6 o'clock? It's like regular traffic. You can't drag race then, a street race. But apparently he was doing that. Him and a Lamborghini were apparently street racing. They ran into some other cars. I believe it was a 6-car pileup. How about this? There were 3 people in the Lamborghini. They just left the car headed in the wrong direction and just got out and walked off. Rasheed Rice got out of the, allegedly got out of the Corvette, and he walked off. He's retained counsel because the DPD, Dallas Police Department, the Popo, was looking for him. He's hired Royce West, not a big surprise there, to be his legal counsel. Royce would do his, put out a statement, and I would imagine Rasheed would be turning himself into authorities for questioning sometime in the next, maybe by the time you've heard this podcast, he will have turned himself in. But I think the bigger question is, man, the initial reaction is to just call it dumb, which it is. But you also understand how young, wealthy athletes feel like they got life by the balls and they got that feeling of invincibility because they got money, They're all well built. They feel like Superman. But damn, dog, Henry Ruggs just did this a couple years ago, man. It changed his whole life when he was speeding on the strip, ran into a woman's car. She died. And he's serving, I believe, 10 years in prison. Career is over. Bank account drained. You had Errol Spence locally flipped his sports car driving while intoxicated. Dude, were these lessons? Are we just, is this just going to happen? Will young people with money always do this sort of thing?
Yeah, they always make bad decisions, and they're younger and younger every year. Like, it just brought to mind when A&M had the best recruiting class the first year of NIL, and then I went on YouTube, and some kid at A&M, and I can't remember his name. I'm glad I don't remember his name. He had a Hellcat. He bought a Hellcat with his money, and he was doing donuts in the parking garage.
Yeah.
And I'm going, what the hell? You know, you get it. The kids are getting younger. They're getting more money, and they're making bad decisions with it. There's no guidance there. So.
And, you know, I think, you know, a very interesting thing about it, and to me, it's I try very hard not to be like this in terms of, I want to come off as preachy, like, hey, you know, because everybody who's young has done something dumb or something they're not proud of. Or like, oh, my God, I can't believe I got away with that one. I don't know what I was thinking when I did that. You know, they're the mistakes of youth. But sometimes when you have so much to lose, you just wish that people would make better decisions. You know, and I think Joe has the right thought process when he's talking about guidance, and it comes from two points to me. And I think, you know, some of his parenting in terms of the way I was raised to act and think a certain way. And so, and I'm not saying I'm alone by any stretch in this, but I can't tell you how many random conversations I had with my son when he was a kid on that 10-minute ride to school or 10-minute ride home from picking him up, where something like this would happen, and I would say, I would send him or, you know, text him a story or screenshot something and say, hey, read this. What do you think? And I spent countless hours talking to him about, you know, decisions and consequences. And you make good decisions, you usually have good consequences, usually. You make bad decisions, you usually have bad consequences. And you got to think about what's going on. Understanding that he wasn't going to always think, which is why he was a kid and he got in trouble, just like I didn't always think when I was a kid and I got in trouble. You just hope that, you know, they think more than they don't think. But, dude, I just, you know, luckily for him, nobody died. But you know what I thought, man? I thought, you know, Rashee Rice was like a second-round pick. He ain't got that big money, that, nope, you know, Tyreek Hill money.
Yep, not yet, right? He don't.
And so when you have an accident like that, they're not finna, the civil suit's not coming against me and Joe. The civil suit's coming against the dude with the name, the dude with the money. Me and Joe just homeboys. We was just along for the ride. Maybe so. Or maybe I'm making that too simplistic, because whoever he was racing against in the Lamborghini, that dude got some money because you got a Lamborghini.
Yeah. And he left the damn Lamborghini there. He sure got some money. He didn't try to wait for the tow truck. They got, you know, it's funny. You can't do nothing today without being on camera. They got pictures of them guys walking away. They got dash cam videos. They got all kinds of stuff, man.
Everybody's a reporter these days, dog.
Yeah. I think.
Think about that. Those sites on Twitter like Dallas TV or CCC TV or whatever. That's nothing but people around the city sending them footage.
We're missing a big one. My wife pays attention to it. I can't remember the name of it, but. Yeah, it's people walking around with cameras
around
in the corner.
Dallas. Like, oh, I saw this. Where should I send it to? Oh, I'm going to send it to blah, blah, blah on Twitter, and then they'll put it out there to the masses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. There's no hiding. There's no secrets.
You know,
it's
harder
than ever to commit a crime.
I think these players, man, what they got to learn is how to flip the switch and turn it on, turn it off. The yin and the yang, what I like to say is, whether you're being a soldier, whether you're being a player, you have to turn off that wild streak that makes you great. Because the same thing that make you great is the same thing that's going to make your ass cry. Because
I don't know that you can turn it off, bro.
You can turn it off.
I think you can.
You can
check this out.
You can turn it off.
I don't know that you can turn it off or that you can channel it in other places, if that makes sense. Because, like, I don't know that Michael Jordan can turn off his competitiveness. You know, I mean, I think you when I talk to Emmitt, he talks about, I love making deals. It's the closest thing I can come to football. And even it's not football, but it's the closest I can come. So I don't know if you can turn it off, but I think you can. It's like them superheroes when they first find their powers. You can try to harness it.
I don't.
And then you can move it.
I don't know nothing about no superheroes. But I know about I know about compartmentalization.
That too. That's another way to say it.
That's as well. That's
what, are we saying the same thing in different ways?
Nah. Because there ain't no such thing as a superhero. I'm talking about compartmentalization. That's what you learn in the service. See, the Army wants you to kill somebody on one block, help old lady on the street, help old lady across the street on the next block, take care of baby, and go back to killing somebody. You got to be able to compartmentalize what you're doing. When you're on that field, get all your, you know, all that competitive stuff, because everybody that's a competitor ain't out here racing cars and killing people and stuff like that. You just have to learn how to leave that stuff where it's at. You know, one of the things I had to learn was when I'm away from the military, don't be about the military. Like, I'd come home. When I came home from Fort Hood, me and you didn't talk about no military stuff. I was doing stuff, you know, regular people stuff. You had to get away from that situation. That was, you understand what I'm saying? Like, me and you, we did video games. We did other stuff. It was never about being a scout the whole damn time. And sometimes you got to put that stuff down. That's what I'm saying.
All right, no, that makes sense. I mean, that thing you said about the service, about the deepest, realest stuff ever, which is, you know, kill somebody right here, and I go help an old lady across the street and go back and forth to the mindsets on a regular basis.
Yeah, you can.
That is more than a notion, you know, to be able to do that and then keep your sanity on top of all of that. So, no, I get that, man.
That's why I say you can, with this young man, quit trying to, you said something good too, where you saying you can't put down your competitiveness, but damn, racing in a crowded street, that's just crazy. We don't know if the,
let me put it like this. Like, I can't get down with street racing at any time.
Right.
But at least I can conceptualize it if you're doing it at midnight, because the streets are a lot fewer cars on the streets.
Yeah.
But yeah. 6 o'clock, everybody's on the streets at 6 o'clock. Like, it's, what are y'all doing?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is I'm sitting here thinking, like, did they know each other? Or did it just somebody, you pull up to somebody? Because one night I was on I-35 in Fort Worth coming back at like 1 o'clock, and I had a brand new Chevy Silverado.
Right.
And I pull up beside somebody in a doggone Corvette or a Mustang or something. I don't know what kind of car it was.
Right.
They got the rev in their car. I got the rev in my car. And they wanted to roll. So we rolled. That's when I found out that my truck had a governor on it at 80. Because we got up to 80. It was middle of the night. Right. We got up to 80. And all of a sudden, my shit just went... You know, it just kind of coughed and slowed down. I'm like, it's a governor on this thing. You know, so it's just that what I'm saying is it could have been a spur of the moment thing. I was a lot younger then, but it could have been a spur of the moment thing, or was they some dumbasses who had drinks and decided to race? What's the talk screen with that boy? You know, that's going to be a big thing right there, too.
Well, he wasn't arrested, so it ain't going to be no talk screen by the time they catch him. It's all out of his system.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by the time he turned himself in, it won't be number water, blood and water in his system.
Good point.
But, you know, you raise a good point, because most of y'all know I got a Porsche. And that happens to me all the time. People roll up next to you, look at you. you know what I mean? Like, for real.
Yeah,
like, you want to go?
Yeah.
And, you know, I got ego. I'm a man. Sometimes I'll be like, yeah, let me just show you what this little thing here could do. And then I catch myself, fool, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I let them just go on and go, and then they can go talk stuff about how they ran the Porsche off the road to their homeboys.
Well, that's age and wisdom right there.
Yeah, because my mom had a boyfriend back in the early 90s who had an SS350 Nova, Super Sport Nova.
Damn.
And he let me borrow it because I was without a car and I was appeared to be a responsible kid. I ain't gonna lie, I had that thing going 125 down 183 about 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning on my way to work.
That's the now, best time. That's the
now
best
it was
time.
Sunday morning. Yeah. There's nobody on the
That's
streets.
The best time. Yeah.
But I did let that thing out. I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah.
But I let it out because it was a no Super Sport Nova. I like. I don't know when I'm gonna get dry. This too many more times. Now, luckily, I did not get pulled over.
Luckily, you didn't lose control of it and die horribly by yourself.
Check this out. I felt my heart going up in my throat.
Not
my throat, but my throat when I hit 125.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I need to back this thing back down.
Yeah. That's what I say. You out there by yourself doing 125. You flip that thing. Yeah. You done.
And I've always liked sports cars. So I had the two-door Cadillac and a convertible. Me and my son went down the back end on 67 toward Midlothian. And we let it out, but because I had him with me, I stopped it at about 105. Mm-hmm. And because I was like, okay, we felt the breeze. Mm-hmm. Now let's go on back to normal. And then we had to have a talk after that. See how we did it? There's no cars out here on the street. We did it for a minute. But that's it. We're not racing nobody. We're just out here enjoying ourselves. And, you know, that's it. And then I was like, I don't know if I should have done that around him or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But these are things you do. So I get it, but I don't get it. It's like people, like, you know, when you have so much to lose, man, you just wish you would think about it more. I mean, I think that's what I'm saying.
Well, the main thing you said was the feeling of invincibility.
Yeah.
You know, where you're invincible in one area of your life and you think it bleeds over. That's why I say you got to turn it off. It bleeds over the ability to be on the football field and do the things you do. Don't bleed over into life. You don't have that much control over other people and other cars. I just can't believe they were speeding at that time. Not that they were speeding, but at that time.
That time is crazy.
So yeah, it's crazy.
It'll be interesting to find out who the other people in the car are and how it comes out. This was so reckless and got such a high profile. He's going to get suspended by the NFL. The question will be, how long is his suspension? 2 games, 4 games, 6 games? Because you've definitely this definitely falls under conduct detrimental to the league. You know, regardless of what happens, because of the negative attention you've brought there. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But that's Rashee Rice. Let's hope he makes some better decisions. And that has been this week's trip around the block, my friends. I haven't forgotten about the Mavericks and Luka and the MVP run and what the Mavericks are doing, how they've won 11 of 12, how they're in fifth place. You know, I love sports, man. Just when you say, hey, the Mavericks can't do this, they're in the play-in tournament, they suck, they get on my nerves.
Yep. I've just been to say, how many times we said they suck this year?
You know what? All they do is score points. They don't play no defense. Ah, the front office is this. Jason Kidd is the Autobot. He can't coach. Yep. Them boys playing some of the best ball in the NBA right now. And I'm telling y'all, they're a problem in the playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to the finals. I'm not going to say they win the championship. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just telling you, they are a problem in the playoffs because what? Playoff basketball, for the most part, is coming down to the fourth quarter. And when it comes down to the fourth quarter, last 3 minutes, they got two killers. Like, two killers in Luka and Kyrie, who can do it off a traditional offense or can just make some shit up at the last minute as the shot clock is going off and there's literally nothing you can do about it. And so that makes them very difficult. And the way that they are getting the ball to Gafford and Lively inside for dunks means they're no longer just a three-point offense. And when the shots fall, they win. And when they don't, they lose. They can hang around with those dunks in that mid-range game that Kyrie got until the three-point start falling. So they are a problem for people right now. We'll see whether they finish fifth or sixth or maybe even fourth in the West. They're only two games behind the Clippers. And, yeah, I did it, dog, so you didn't have to. Their schedule is much easier than the Clippers in these last eight games.
I did a 180 on Kyrie, man.
Oh.
You hear all the notoriety about him. We talked about that before, why he settled down here. But yeah. I did a 180. He's played the most consistent basketball here than he has in the last three or four years.
I'm telling you, dog. And we really are going to talk about this on Thursday. It's going to be – it's peace of mind, okay? It's maturity because he's in his 30s now. And it's the fact he's with his crew. Jason Kidd, his idol. Nico Harrison, who's known him since he's a teenager. He's got peace of mind. So he can play at a high level, and he ain't worried about all the off-the-field stuff, off-the-court stuff.
Well, he ain't saying nothing either. He ain't saying, you know. I'm sure people baiting him with stupid questions. He ain't answering them.
No, it's not really, dog. Here's the difference. And I've had this conversation lots over the years. Now, the media in general has changed, but the Dallas media is some of the best media in the U.S. And here's what I mean. Because I've been to all of them. I've seen them all in action. The Dallas media is really, it can be very hard. It can be very critical. But it's rarely unfair. It's rarely sensationalistic. New York, that's a sensational media.
Gotcha.
They're always looking for the sensational story. They're always looking to blow things out of proportion. Philadelphia, that's the hard, crusty ass, we have to live in Philly, so we always mad media. You win 10 in a row, they mad about something. Mm. Dallas is very fair when it comes to the media. If you suck, they finna get in your ass. If you're great, we finna give you praise. If you win the championship, okay, we praising you. If you lost eight in a row, we in your ass. If you won 10 in a row, yeah, here go the plaudits for all the guys who played well. It's really rocks like that. It's very, you know, it's all about how the team is playing, really. It's not all the other ancillary stuff.
I've seen that. I see that. I can see that big time.
You know? And so yep. He's not getting a lot of things. Ain't nobody asking him about some movie he watched and all this stuff. They just want to know how he's playing on the basketball court. And he's been very good in those interviews because I've seen a lot of them. I've watched the YouTubes of them afterwards. So, and trying to keep up with him. So, I think all of that, you know, all of that is why he's playing some of the best basketball of his career right now. So, we're going to talk about the Rangers on Thursday. I mean, on Friday's episode. The Mavericks. We're also going to talk about the Rangers. Josh Young, off to a fantastic start, broke his wrist. Got hit by a pitch and broke his wrist on the night we had four ribbies and a homer in a win over Tampa. Here's the only good thing. It's baseball. So he's going to miss about 2 months, which means he's going to be back in July, probably after the All-Star break. He'll be here for all of August, all of September, and all of the playoff run, whatever that is, for your Texas Rangers. So it sucks that he's hurt. Sucks that he had that calf. Sucks that he got hurt last year. But, you know, he's had more bad luck than anything. These are not soft tissue injuries where you should say maybe you should train differently. I mean, ain't nothing you can do about broken bones.
Yeah, I'd like to do more baseball.
All right, we got baseball coming. So, yeah. But that's coming down the pipe. Plenty of Rangers conversation, including what the hell wrong with Jose Leclerc. Now, here's the thing. He got five walks and one strikeout in the first three appearances. But it's early. He probably hadn't got his command yet. Not everybody leaves spring training in midseason form. Clearly, he's not. But good thing is baseball season lasts forever and a day, as my mama used to say. So we appreciate Greening Law. Remember, if you've been involved in a car accident, it's not your fault. Give him a call. 972-934-8900. Friends at Smokey John's Barbecue. Can't do the show without them. And you can find the show. Please, go to the YouTube channel. The Real Jacques Talk. Subscribe, rate, review, leave us a comment. We love y'all. We got some big things popping off at the start of May. We want to let you know about it, and you need to know about them. You can follow the show on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. You can find me on Twitter. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor at JJT Journalist. And hey, do this for your boy. Go to Clapper. That's right, Clapper. It's kind of like TikTok, but it's Clapper. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor. I got all my Cowboy stuff will be on Clapper. You can find me at I am Jean-Jacques Taylor on Clapper. Easy to find. Got a bunch of videos up there. That's where you can find my Cowboys content. It's worth your time. Trust me on that. So until we chat again, for Big Joe and the Big Rig, you guys be blessed.